Back together, you and I, on a Tuesday, November 16th, 2021 edition of Connecticut Today. The Kyle Rittenhouse trial, a very high-profile trial in Wisconsin, particularly in the area of self-defense. What is a viable and legal self-defense claim? What isn't? Quinnipiac University law professor, one of our Legal Eagle staff members, checked back in with us to give us his thoughts on that. And we checked in with Fairfield GOP State Rep Laura Devlin on rumors of some election year tax relief. In the news, we've talked about it here in the station, and it's in our network news at the top and bottom. Another one of these high-profile trials, the National Guard on hand there in Wisconsin, the governor calling up about 500 guards, men and women. This, of course, the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, a 17-year-old kid, well, he was 17 at the time, goes with a high-powered semi-automatic gun to ostensibly protect businesses in Kenosha in the wake of racially charged rioting. Last year, he's on trial now. Two people shot, one wounded. What's the deal there? Was this self-defense? A myriad of things in this trial. And to give us his perspective, as always, we'd like to welcome Quinnipiac University law professor Bill Dunlap back to give us his performance. Bill, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Doing just fine. How are you, Paul?
I'm good, Bill. Bill, give us the bird's eye view from your perch on this. I know you've been following it. What are your thoughts on this case and all the twists and turns?
You know, it's really hard to say. It's not only a high-profile case, it is the most confusing case that I have ever tried to follow. There are so many twists and turns here.
Yeah, and Bill, coming from you, that I think that explains it, even with your background. So let's start here. The base of the case, Bill, before we get into all the ancillaries of should he have been there, what were his intentions, you have a kid here with an AR-15, which the media likes to refer to as an assault weapon. He kills two people. He wounds a third, Bill, because he feels he was threatened. Self-defense. What are the general tenets here of a self-defense defense in a trial like this, and how do you think they've played out?
Well, self-defense is what's usually referred to as an affirmative defense, meaning it's an issue that the prosecution at first doesn't have to raise. But if the defendant does raise it, then unlike a lot of states, in Wisconsin, the prosecution has to disprove the self-defense claim beyond a reasonable doubt. And the self-defense claim is that he reasonably believed that this deadly force was necessary to prevent imminent death or great bodily harm to him. So he had to believe that he was about to be killed or grievously wounded in order to justify this these fatal shootings.
Now, Bill, was that a tough order on the defense or the prosecution side here? Because, you know, this wasn't like a home invasion, or this wasn't like just walking the street one night. This was in the middle of social unrest. I think Rittenhouse said he was attacked by a guy hitting him with a skateboard. Another guy grabbed the gun. Was it difficult or maybe easier here, in your opinion, for the various counsels here and the prosecutors to get into this self-defense thing or not?
Well, I don't think the fact that there was unrest going on down the block played much role in this, but there was certainly a lot of discussion over whether or not he should have been there at all, although that's probably not legally relevant, and whether or not he should have reasonably felt threatened by a skateboard or by somebody grabbing at his leg. And the prosecution and the defense put these images in very, very different lights.
In what way?
The jury's going to have to sort through. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, Bill, I'm sorry for stepping on you. So in what different lights did they put it? Ways that you expected or not?
Oh, I think it was essentially what I or anybody expected there, that the prosecution was trying to argue that Kyle here was an instigator, that he provoked the situation by walking through this area with an assault weapon, or however you want to characterize it. And the defense was arguing, well, he was just minding his own business. He was there trying to help out. And these other people came up and tried to pick fights with him. So each one was looking at the other as the instigator or the provoker.
Bill Dunlap, professor of constitutional law at Quinnipiac University. Bill, now you touched on something a couple of seconds ago. I'm glad you did, because I wanted to bring that up. There is so much ancillary noise in this case, Bill, I believe, of people who say, well, he shouldn't have been there. Why was he there? And as you said, forgive me if I misheard you, but I believe you just mentioned that's not really germane to the case, is it, Bill? That's not what's being litigated here.
Well, in the big picture, it's probably not terribly germane, but the prosecution can focus on his being there holding this fairly large weapon as provocation. So when we look at the very specific details, I think arguments can be made that it's relevant. But in terms of why was he up there in the first place, he went out of state in order to be there. Those questions didn't really play much of a role in the arguments.
Okay, a couple of more things, Bill. First of all, there was from all the legal people I know and stuff that I was chatting with, people that I was chatting with and commentary online, I guess, Bill, there was a little bit of surprise when the prosecution went to a witness that seemed to go against their case and to bolster Rittenhouse's case?
I did not see that part of it. I'm sorry, I can't really comment on it.
No, that's fine. That's fine. And the second thing is, what do you make of the judge here? He's taken a little bit of heat here for, you know, people think he's not being impartial. He's snapping at the prosecution and the defense. Anything from the judge here in this case that kind of surprised you or not? Do these things generally happen and we're just seeing them and hearing them?
Yeah, there was a fair amount of criticism of the judge early on, saying that he seemed to be biased towards the defendant here. But I think in the overall case, that even though he made a number of controversial rulings, they probably went more or less evenly for the defense and for the prosecution. And towards the very end, his allowance of lesser included charges, allowing the jury to consider lesser charges if they decide he's not necessarily guilty of first degree intentional homicide. That, I think that was a big boost for the prosecution.
Yeah, it was good.
Because if the jury wasn't going to convict of the most serious offenses, their only alternative could have been complete acquittal. And now there's a possibility for compromise.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Bill, when that happened, I'm wondering here, having never spent a minute during an active trial, is that surprising? And does that throw perhaps the defense for any defendant like a little bit in a loop when a judge says at that point of a trial, Bill, oh, OK, and by the way, you can consider this as well?
Well, I think the defense probably expected it, or at least expected it to be raised. A lot of the newspaper reports seem to suggest that this was unusual, that if the prosecution asked for it, they must be not confident in their case. And if the judge asked for it, that's a big favor to the prosecution. But in fact, that sort of thing happens at the end of a lot of very serious cases. So I don't think there's much to be read into it. But I think it was a real advantage to the prosecution that the judge went ahead and did that.
As always, wonderful insight. Quinnipiac University Law Professor Bill Dunlap. Bill, as always, we thank you for your time. We really appreciate it, and take care. Thank you.
You too, Paul.
Appreciate it. There you go. All right, folks, there you go. Bill Dunlap laying it out for us. So we'll see what shakes out of this. Who knows? They could come back with something tonight or tomorrow or whatever. Laura Devlin back with us. State Rep, Republican House District 134, residents of Fairfield and Trumbull. I wanted to have Laura on to talk about all the rumblings we're hearing about. Hey, tax relief, is this something real? Is this going to be a, you know, shell game, a three-card Monty game, just moving dollars around? Hey, Laura, it's Paul again. How are you?
Hi, Paul. I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you, Laura. I wanted to have you on because I know you're one of the people that sits on the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Commission, so you know what's going on with all the numbers of the Capitol. Now, we're hearing, Laura, surprisingly, heading into an election year, I'm shocked, about about tax relief here. And the first thing people think of, Laura, as I said in the last segment before you called in, it's like, wow, tax relief. Does that mean the sales tax? Does that mean the income tax? What are we looking at here, Laura? And is this real relief, or are we talking offsets here? Are there any concrete ideas here?
So all really good questions. And, you know, this idea was recently floated by the governor looking at property tax relief, which is something that he had campaigned on and never delivered upon. And entering into an election year, it is resurfacing. There's also talk about potentially reducing the gas tax. None of this has come, you know, to the Finance Committee. We reconvene in session in February. Mm-hmm. But I think any discussion about sustainable relief, right, not just election year gimmicks, is something that the people of Connecticut would welcome. And we're facing record-breaking inflation. The costs of everything are skyrocketing. We need some relief.
You know, Laura, you mentioned the property tax, and that's so much more of a game of political twister than the gas tax is. Because the gas tax, okay, that's the same at every gas station in the state, both on the state or federal level. You know, the station owners, they adjust the other part of the pricing equation by how well they're doing in the convenience store and all that and what kind of neighborhood they're in. But the whole property tax relief thing, Laura, seems to be this constant elephant in the room as to, you know, what's fair, what's not fair, and how you give relief to people, you know, Laura, who are in some really high tax, you know, city and urban areas versus, you know, some low tax suburbs. The taxes may be low, but the assessments are so high.
Yeah, the property taxes are high. And in the legislature on both sides of the aisle, we have talked about this for years with no action. One of the reasons for actually increasing the sales tax when it moved up to 6.35% was to give part of that money to municipalities to try to provide some relief for property tax, but that never materialized. And I think it's not just looking at, I do think we need to look at ways, are there legitimate opportunities to reduce the cost of living in Connecticut by looking at various taxes? But let's also look at programs that are going to increase costs, like the highway use fee that's going to be put on trucks that is going to increase the cost of all goods across our state. So I think that we just have to really be sincere and not just look at, you know, maybe one-time gimmicks that might be favorable in an election year to provide some relief, but can we do something sustainable to not only address what is current costs to stay in our state, but programs like the highway use tax that are going to increase the cost of all goods going forward in our state. So I think we really have to be holistic and be sincere to provide some, you know, relief and greater affordability for our state.
All right, Laura, hang on. We'll be right back with you. More coming up with Republican State Rep Laura Devlin, General Assembly District 134, Fairfield and Trumbull, talking about what's going to come up in a couple of months when the General Assembly gets back together and all this talk, anyway, heading into an election year, maybe, possibly some sort of, in air quotes here, tax relief. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And a couple more minutes with Laura Devlin, Republican state rep, joining us to talk taxes and all that. You know, Laura, it's things like this that you just mentioned a couple of minutes ago that really, as much as we love Connecticut, you're here, you're a transplant, I was born here. We love the state because of the location and the seasons and the brilliant people and the different places to live. But, man, to run the place, Lauren, I mean, Laura, it's maddening, you know, sometimes, isn't it? And you read these, you know, I was reading an op-ed last week, Laura, from somebody who said, well, how dare these people leave Connecticut? It's such a wonderful place to live. I agree with that, Laura. But the problem is, you can say it's a wonderful place to live, but we seem to have these problems that never get fixed. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think that's where we also need to be careful, Paul, because if we didn't have the unprecedented amount of federal money coming into our state right now, we would currently be in a deficit.
Mm.
So we've got to be careful and be realistic and be honest with the people in the state of Connecticut. If we do look at tax relief, which, hey, I'm all for, if we can do it in a legitimate way, you know, what does that mean for the long term? You know, how can we, luckily, with the reforms that were Republican-led to put in the volatility cap, the rainy day fund, our state's in better financial shape than before because we have been forced to save, whereas before, all that money would just get spent. So we really, it's complex, and I think we need to look holistically.
Yeah, and you know, Laura, one thing that people always ask me, because they know I speak to people like you in the General Assembly, they always ask me, Laura, and I'm just telling you what my wink-wink constituents say. They always say, hey, Paul, the next time you have a state rep or state senate member on, they say, yeah, ask him, where's all the gambling money going to go? Laura, do we know that? Is that just going into
good
general?
Question.
What?
Good question.
Yeah. So I take it that I'm not the only one scratching my head on that, because what did we have, a million bets in like the first week or so? So, you know, let me ask you out front, Laura, is this just a general fund dump here? Look, because if it pays the bills, I'm great with it. But is there any specificity in the statutes that are now governing this?
So in fairness, with some of the most recent changes, I can't speak to exactly where that money is going to be earmarked and to go. It certainly should not just be a general fund dump. I would agree.
Yeah. Okay. And again, I guess we are still, what, Laura, like a year away from any, you know, really notion of retail pot sales. I know that's another thing that, you know, there's at least somewhat of a complicated formula set up that I know is apparently going to take more time than people realize to find out who's going to be on the retail end of this whole thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So we'll see, Laura, as we turn the corner here and we get into the, you know, the tax relief twister. Laura, can you do me a favor? And you can attach my name to this bill. Can we do something about the property tax for cars? Really? Seriously? You know, that's one I get calls on as well to Laura, about either why do we have it, or, and I have friends that used to work up at the General Assembly. I know there's kind of always this push to say, well, if we're not going to get rid of it, can we make a standard rate? You know, and I've seen, you know, states that do this, Laura, that have a rate that doesn't vary by city or town like a house does. We know where a house is located, right? That affects the value. But, you know, why is my car valued differently in one municipality or the other? That's another one I get complaints on.
Right. Absolutely worth looking at. And it is discussed. Nothing has obviously happened, but you have my word. I will certainly bring that forward.
All right. Bless you, Laura, because you have far more patience than I do if I was ever in the General Assembly. Republican State Rep. Laura Devlin, good to hear from you again, Laura. Have a good Thanksgiving, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. All right. There you go. A little tax talk with Republican State Rep. Laura Devlin. That is District number 134, Fairfield and Trumbull.